session number 11273, reel 3.
Major Kenwood, Reel 3. We were talking about your period in defence in front of Vimy Ridge. I wanted to ask you about, you'd almost in a sense volunteered for this job, and yet when you were going down the hill under heavy shell fire, you were of course nervous. What was it that gave you the strength to carry on? Do you have any idea now what it was that sort of balanced off the fear and the wanting to volunteer?
Oh, one had to go. No matter how afraid you were, the job was to be done. You had to go.
What made you want to have to go, if you see what I mean?
Well, I didn't want the other chap to have to go. I was supposed to be temporary in command. I wasn't really aware of that, but Jos Percy told me I was, so that was it. I didn't want to send the other bloke down to this horrible place. That was the idea.
So there was no attack on your positions?
No.
Initially, anyway. No. What happened next, then?
Well, there were plane attacks. There was an awful plane called Charlie, somebody or other, used to come round. We knew him as Charlie. And he was a beggar. If anybody went to a latrine, he was after them, you know, that sort of thing. And apart from that, I don't remember very much happening. There's no real attack on the
How were you managing for food and rations at this point? I mean,
there's no problem with that at all. Our quartermaster was superb. He had everything set up behind the ridge, had all the cooks there. It was absolutely superb. We got hot meals, no trouble.
So even when you were forward of the ridge in this awful village, the name of which
we were up, he was up there in Mario, seeing that everybody got meals. Everything was
Mario.
Mario was a village, yes.
This is where you took up the position.
That's right, yes.
And so he came down this road.
Oh yes. Took his cooks down there. Yes. Marvellous quartermaster. Super chap.
How long were you in this position then? You'd arrived at night.
Yes, I think we were just in for the following day, and we came out the following morning after that. We were in for a full day. And the following morning we came out.
a lot of you though.
Everybody, yeah. Yep. I think everybody was told to move back to our original positions behind names of places I do forget. Near to Lille, anyway. And
so this was quite a major fallback.
It was a complete retreat. And there was only one road to go on. That was the Arras-Lens road. And we had a lot of transport, and we were all in a hurry. And the whole brigade was there, the whole division was there.
This must have
and all the supporting, a terrific target. How on earth we ever got there without being bombed? We never bombed. The whole division got back there without any serious accident.
Did you understand why you were retreating? You were on your second lieutenant, but you were attached to brigade headquarters. Did you get an inkling of what was going on?
No, I didn't think so. Just that we'd moved so much. We'd never stopped moving since the 16th of September. No, 16th of May. And we were just used to moving. And the next thing was to move on there. But the
exhaustion beginning to tell.
Everybody was exhausted there. Yeah.
What sort of... I mean, I know there's a problem with some officers in the 6th Battalion getting very tired and making mistakes. Did you see any evidence of that yourself amongst either officers, NCOs or men? Fatigue causing efficiency to drop? Or?
No, I didn't see anything like that, no. I heard about the cooks later on going to sleep and not knowing it was dawn.
Not knowing
that we'd withdrawn. Harry Sale eventually whipped along the top there the day afterwards and found them and brought them back.
That was on the 22nd, I think.
Was it? Mm. 22nd of May, yeah. That's right. Anyway, the 8th Battalion didn't get the call early enough, and they were left in this hamlet down on the bottom of beyond the ridge for a long time, for hours, before the information came with the Don R, I think. Before we
so
got
communications were breaking down a little.
They'd never been terribly good. Mm, that's true.
But you pulled back with the 8th Battalion?
Yes.
And you still had your full complement of 3 guns?
Yes, oh yes. Yes.
And do you remember anything about the retreat other than the crampness of the road, so to speak?
Yes, I do remember a most peculiar thing, my own ridiculous foolishness. If anything en route on a road got stopped, you got out and got the rest of the transport passed while you stopped and did it. I was so concerned with my own 800 weight breaking down that I got right into it myself in the under the bonnet and everybody there and forgot all about the people behind me. And there they were, stuck for half an hour or so. Until one of the regimental sergeant majors came rushing up. 8th Battalion, I think. Called me all sorts of silly young buggers and so on. And, got the rest of them round behind and I tottered along behind them eventually.
So there wasn't room to pass on this road?
No, there's room to pass, yes. But normally when a column stops, a column stops. You don't go past unless you're told to come past.
Well, a situation like that, where you were obviously a youngish officer...
Well, I should have known better at 26 or 27, shouldn't I?
But the 8th Battalion Regimental Sergeant Major, or whoever...
I think I'm not sure.
They'd have no qualms about really ripping into...
Oh, not a Regimental Sergeant Major, no. Good Lord, no. But respectfully, of course. Even there.
Did he tell you what?
With respect, sir, you're a bloody idiot. Oh, I'm terribly sorry, Sergeant Major. Terribly sorry. Get on with it. Leave me here. I'll manage.
What was the problem, the mechanical problem you were facing?
Oh, I think it was something very easy. I don't know what it was now.
Were the vehicles mechanically reliable, usually?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Yes.
So this was a fairly rare event?
Yes, yes. I had my own... We had a transport sergeant in the anti-tank company. A transport sergeant, but of course he was away. I was alone with my platoon. He wasn't there, but we found it. Just cleaning out a carburetor, I think, that's all. Eventually.
So what? So you got going again. Were you now last in the column, or were there other units behind
you? Oh, there were still others coming behind, yes. Don't know who we were, no idea. But we got the military police were there to guide us where we had to go when we got to Lons, I think it was. And we all went into, not into billets, but into areas where we knew the area fairly well. We'd been there quite a long time. Can't remember the names of any of the places, but that doesn't matter a great deal. No.
We can look that sort of thing up, you know, if you want to attach it to a place. Mm. And what was your own state? Was this sort of mistake you'd made, could that possibly have been attributed to fatigue?
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely, yes. I think I went out like a light for about 10 hours after that, went to sleep. Nobody bothered me, I don't think.
And everyone was pretty well in the same state?
Oh, I think so. Mm-hmm. I think they must have been, because I think that was the 9th Battalion fault. They were up in a town fairly well forward, and they got very badly shelled and machine gunned and attacked, and they lost an awful lot of men. I think they were asleep, most of them in houses. And they came back, and I was at brigade, forward at brigade headquarters. I'd got my position, but I hadn't any role to play with either any of the battalions. And a lot of men came rushing through as nightfall was coming on. They were all from the 9th Battalion, some from my own C Company. Old C Company, and I knew one or two of them, and they were just running back, quite a lot of them.
Were they panicking?
They were panicking, yeah, I was astonished, yes. So I gathered them all together and lit a huge fire, got as much foodstuffs as we could together and plonked them down, gave them cigarettes, cups of tea, and gave them something to eat, held them there, and instructed the sergeant, cover all the lanes and so on in this direction, bring them all in. Make them happy, give them, see if they don't go any further. And I whipped off to brigade, which wasn't very far away, and reported it to the brigadier. And he said, take them back. Get them all together. Just take them back quietly. Give them to the 9th Battalion. And I did that, took them back into this town. I've forgotten the name of the town.
This is where they'd been bombed.
Well, yeah, and they were badly.
Did they get into trouble for having broke?
Oh, I don't think so, no. It was I think everybody had panicked. It was the shelling on the houses, you know. And
when they were asleep?
Most of them being asleep, and I think one or two sentries didn't know they were in the front line. They were just going to sleep, and that was it.
Did you get any confirmation of it, that they were asleep? I mean.
Oh, no, I didn't. This was my own idea, I thought.
Just an impression you have.
Yeah, yeah. I talked to one or two of the men who had said they'd just gone into a house and just gone to sleep. There weren't any people there.
And the next thing, they were being shelled, and that had caused some of them to...
Yes, yes. Shelling was very violent. Company commander was very badly wounded, I remember. And one or two of the other officers as well, and quite a lot of men. Quite a lot of casualties.
So you took the men forward?
Yep.
And
I took them
back to the 9th.
And found an officer there and said who they were, and he said, all right, we'll distribute them. I stayed with them for quite a long time.
Were you still very attacked? I mean, would you have rather been with the 9th Battalion than...
I don't think I had any preference. I was doing the job I was told to do, and that was it. I didn't mind.
So what happened next?
I would have minded if I'd left the battalion altogether. I wouldn't have wanted to go to any
other... You didn't mind being detached out of a brigade?
No, I was still attached to the 9th Battalion, really.
Yeah. So what happened next?
Can't remember much. Except that the next thing we had to do was to go back towards Belgium and take a defensive position. I think it was the 5th Division and the 50th together, a defensive position facing Belgium on the west. I also told to take my platoon. I can't remember where everybody was at the time, but I do remember a lot of patrol activity. And I was told to take my platoon to take over from a French company across a stream. It was almost a river. It was quite big. One had to get across somehow. I couldn't find my way. It was a point on the map, and I found it, and I didn't know who was on my right or left or anything. Put everybody down and went forward with the sergeant to find out what it was all about. And shouted across the river and immediately got Bren gun or automatic fire in return and shouted in French, my best schoolboy French, that I was English. We were taking over their positions, and eventually it calmed down, and I got across there and found out who they were, and they were North African troops. They were spies, and I took over eventually, but they seriously threatened us. And they just went out. They had horses, strangely enough. Took the horses out and took over that position. That's all I can remember about that part of the war. Don't remember anymore.
Oh, that's the end of... You don't remember falling back to Dunkirk?
I remember going along Bray Dunes, yes, marching along Bray Dunes.
But there's a gap between...
I can't remember what happened.
Do you think the memory lapse might have been connected with fatigue?
Could be. There's only one thing I do remember, and that is going up to... Sammy Battiscombe had a company in the 9th Battalion, and he was on the top of a hill, and there was a bridge down below, and that bridge had to be blown, I believe, and we were safeguarding that. And my platoon was with his company, quite a strong anti-tank platoon defence there, looking straight downhill on a forward slope. And I remember going to get orders from brigade on my motorbike, and I came back on my motorbike and found that Sammy Battiscombe had his company lined up on a track behind the little copse behind the position, and three guns were coming out, and I played hell with Sammy. He was a major then, but we were great friends. I played hell with him and said, who had given instructions to my guns to go out? He said, I have, of course, you bloody fool. I said, well, they're going back again. I've just been to brigade headquarters. There's no question of movement order yet. So back I went, and I said, I want some Bren guns and support as well. He was very apologetic, so back the Bren guns went. And his company, except for a platoon in defence, a great regular soldier, he knew when the movement order was coming, and he was prepared to go. And I think the bridge had been blown by then. The sappers were coming uphill. But I remember what a fool I was doing that sort of thing to a man, a young second lieutenant, doing to this to a chap who'd been in the army such a long time and knew all about it. A very senior major.
Did you say he was a friend of yours, although he was
Yes, knew him well. He'd been the adjutant of the battalion, the 9th battalion, when as a captain. He was very bluff, a bit of a county man, difficult to understand for a northerner, you know, to understand his language. But he was a terribly, terribly nice fellow, full of interest.
What do you mean
active.
By county? Sorry, could you just explain a bit more?
Not county language, but county accent. Instead of saying to one of our chaps, you've got to go out of the back, which he understood, you must go back. Didn't understand them at all. Men didn't understand them. I just understood them, and that was all. But he was a great bloke.
Now, your anti-tank, had you actually had... I mean, I understand the role you played in the defence of various positions, and but had they actually had to open fire on tanks yet?
Oh, yes. Yes, do you know, I can't remember where it was, one particular place. Oh, it was coming there, I do remember now. It was on the way back to the beaches. We were still in defence. We went back canal after canal after canal.
Covering bridges?
Yeah. And we fired at every one. We fired at something that we could see on the other side. And always got response. We always fired at again. Several times, many times.
Could you judge the effectiveness of your fire as anti-tank fire?
Oh, yes, yes. We set on transport on fire quite often. And coming over a bridge, I remember, particularly a big transport, we hit that. It was an armoured one. And up it went. And out the men piled a lot of them went into the water over the top of the bridge. I remember that. And then the company I was with, I remember the company command. No, the adjutant, Scotty Beatty. Scott Beatty. Frank. Scott Beatty. Who was there with the company at the time. He'd been brought up to give a message to this company. I think it was B Company. And he said he'd never been so viciously stonked with mortars in his life before. We had about a quarter of an hour when nobody could move. This was in retaliation to the anti-tank gun fire. Nobody else was firing. But here were these two marvellous things coming down the road, one onto the bridge, and we let fly at them. But of course the poor old sergeant on that gun had to disappear smartly away from there. It got hit straight away. And ammunition went up too, and we lost that gun. And we got very heavily stonked, I remember. That was at Bull's Camp. Yes, that was at our final position before we went back.
So that you lost your first gun there in the retaliation?
No, I'd lost two by that time.
How did you lose the other
one? I'd lost another one in similar circumstances a little earlier on one of the canals.
So it was the firing and then the retaliation?
There's no way in which you could find a proper place to put a gun. You just had to put it in the middle of a track or in full view and so on, of a bridge. Fire when something came over and then scatter. And that gun went. There's no chance of getting the gun out.
So you'd not abandon the gun, but once you'd fired it and hit what you were aiming at, the crew would leave the gun.
Oh, had to, yes, by Jove. All the heads had it. The immediate attack was straight on the gun, because there was observation from high points and buildings on the other side of the canals and so on.
So there's no question of even trying to get it away?
Well, we did on one, I remember, trying to get it away, but you had to bring up a 40 to get it away. There's no way of carrying. Yeah.
So the guns sort of were, in some cases, were fire once.
Oh, yes.
I mean, you could fire them.
Oh, they were all fired several times, but I remember this did happen.
But in certain circumstances, once you'd open fire, then they were fairly well doomed.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. When they were in that sort of situation where it wasn't really a proper defensive locality, we just sort of thrown ourselves into place in front of the canal to stop them coming over.
So they were effective against normal transport, effective against sort of armoured transport. Did you actually test their effectiveness against tanks?
Yes, yes. I think they bounced off. I'm almost sure they did.
They bounced off?
Yeah.
Did you see that happening?
Oh, I don't think so. Just that it had no effect, but we heard the sound of them hitting. And this was fairly close range, I believe. I don't remember seeing one, but I was told by the sergeant this happened.
That must have been fairly disheartening.
Oh, very well. They knew it wasn't a very good weapon, you know.
Well, would anyone use the boys in these circumstances?
I never saw boys used, never.
Would they get abandoned at all, boys' anti-tank rifles? I mean, with these long marches?
I imagine when we got on the beaches they would be.
They'd have them with them until then?
Oh, I think so, yes. We had to destroy vehicles, of course.
Do you remember anything else, before we come to the actual beach, do you remember anything else about Bull's Camp? Because that was quite a big affair.
Yes, I do. I remember. I went to brigade headquarters. I was told by the CO of the 9th Battalion, Joss Percy, to go to brigade and stay there and wait for orders, because we were then stretched in a single line. Two battalions, the 8th and the 9th, I don't know where the 6th was. And so I did. And Ted Love, the QM, was there too. I don't know what he was doing there. I suppose he was waiting for orders too. And then Clive James, who was the brigade major, I think, yeah, came whistling back into headquarters while we were all sitting waiting for him and for the brigadier. And he threw his pistol off and sort of took the filth out of his neck and so on, and said, "Bloody good show. A Company, 9th Battalion, just done a counterattack and regained position, the original position." He said, "I'm afraid all the officers are dead, but a bloody good show." Well, my brother was commanding that company. And Ted Love got home and said, "For Christ's sake, Clive, let's get next door out of the way." And he said, "That's his brother sitting there. I could hear all this going on." I thought, "Oh, yeah, oh, that's great." It so transpired they weren't. None of them were killed. There was one of them taken prisoner and another one wounded. Tony Hartnell was wounded, and the chap who was gazetted with me was taken prisoner. And
must have been a bit of a shock to you when he said it, though.
Oh, it was indeed, yes. Oh, yes, I was quite violent about it. Anyway, I got the orders, whatever they were, I forget. Took them back to Joss Percy, and he said, "Righto, rejoin." And so I got the whole of the anti-tank platoon down with rifles and Bren guns in this one ditch, the whole two battalions lining one ditch, really.
And you just had one gun left now?
Yeah, and that was still behind. And Maurice Kirby had three guns, I think. Yes, he had three guns, so we had four guns there. He was looking after them. We put them in position, he knew what he was doing. So I got the whole of my platoon down there, and we were determined just to sell our lives, and that was it, on the last ditch. Rifle fire. And there was a lot of machine gunning going on. The false fusiliers were there, covering us. They were very good. But I can't remember any artillery fire.
On either side?
I can't know. Well, yes. I can remember an awful lot of German artillery fire, yes. Yes, the whole of the village and the chateau were all completely knocked about. I remember one particular thing. When the shelling was at its highest and the mortaring was at its highest, one of my sergeants, a corporal, couldn't stand it any longer. And he said, "Be violent, I'm going to see, get one of those sods myself." And he ran with his rifle out of the ditch, straight up on the top, and got a hold of the shell fire to himself and was killed. How stupid can you get? Man mustn't do that. That's the last thing to do. And then we were taking wounded, there were quite a lot of wounded, we were taking wounded back to the chateau, and I went back with some of them. And there was one of my sergeants had been hit in the throat, and he kept saying, gurgling, he was all right. But we got him back there, and I stayed and waited to see what was going to happen to him, and I saw the operation on him. And our old MO, who has since died, said, "Oh, this is easy," and put his finger in his throat through the wound like that and stuck a straw through, or something like that, I don't know what it was. He didn't have real medical equipment there, and bound the whole thing up and tied it round. Gave him a drink of something, and he sat up and said, "Well, where's my rifle? Come on, we're on the way back." And this damn thing sticking out here, he was breathing through this, evidently. Marvellous, I thought.
When did you find your brother wasn't dead or wounded?
It was after we came out of Bull's Camp.
So all throughout this period, you were fairly upset emotionally.
Yes. I thought he was a gunner. Yeah. Yes, I thought he was. And Norman Henderson was taken prisoner there. He was a chap who was commissioned with me. So
you were you'd gone back. You rejoined them in the line, did you, after this?
Oh yes, yes. And then things calmed down. Somebody else must have taken over from us. I think the 5th Division, and we were pulled out.
During this period of heavy mortar and shell fire, what was it like, as far as you remember now, to be under heavy mortar or shell fire?
It was just very frightening. You didn't know what to do, whether to move or not to move, or whether to try and fire a rifle. There was nothing to fire a rifle at. There were no men coming at you. It was just shell fire. Just very frightening. You had to dig down as far as you could. It's no good trying to help anybody else. They were doing the same thing.
And you just get as low as you could then?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. But as soon as it finished, if you knew it had finished, you had to be up pretty quickly because you didn't know what was going on. You wanted to control then.
Was there any difference between mortar fire and shell fire as far as which was more effective or frightening?
No, I don't think so. The shell fire was usually reserved, I think, for anti-battery fire. And so on. We didn't get a great deal of that.
So it was mainly mortar
fire? Mostly mortar fire, direct stuff, and that was very, very frightening. More frightening, I think, than shell fire.
Did you have your own mortars to pay to?
Oh, yes, indeed. We had a mortar platoon, yes.
And were they very active?
Very active, yes, very active indeed. Yeah. And the mortar officer was wounded very badly at, I forget where now, in the back and the hand. And he was died only a year or two ago. What was his name? I've forgotten.
Were you suffering a lot of casualties then throughout this? Your platoon, had you suffered many casualties by this stage?
Not a great number, no. I think we were doing better than the infantry companies. I can't remember how many, but less than a third of us, I think.
And you were pulled out of Bull's Camp. You were replaced at Bull's Camp.
I think, somebody took over from us at Bull's Camp. That's right. Further back than Bull's Camp, I don't know where. And we were told to go to Dunkirk, I think.
Did you realise at this stage you were falling back to Dunkirk for an evacuation? Or did you have any idea what was happening at all?
Well, these leaflets had been coming down by the ton, and we were laughing at them, saying how ridiculous they were.
From the Germans?
Yes, we'll keep these leaflets saying we were surrounded, and all we had to do was to give up. And nothing else we could do.
Are these the leaflets that you occasionally see now? Pictures of the ones with a map of where you were?
That's right, yes. I didn't keep one, unfortunately.
And you didn't believe it?
No, I thought it was absolute nonsense.
But it was, in fact, reasonably true, wasn't it?
Yes, we hadn't realised how small the line had become and what a small amount of land was left to us to get out. We knew nothing at all about that.
And you didn't know you were going to be evacuated either?
No, we didn't, no.
So you fell back towards Dunkirk?
Yeah, we thought we were just going to take up another position near the coast, the Belgian coast. And so we came back to that way. But I remember the second in command was the only one who had a map, and it was a Michelin map. And he had to get to the coast, a particular place at the coast, a rendezvous there. And I remember talking to him. And I remember the going in the silence of the night, no shell fire, no gunfire, no air attack, no nothing. In the silence of the night with no lights, plodding along these country lanes and so on, all in vehicles. trying to find this place. I remember that. And I remember coming to a place where we were just told to destroy everything we had and just carry our own weapons onto the beach.
Well, that must have given you an idea.
Yes, absolutely. By then we were beginning to think, what on earth has gone wrong here?
How did you go about destroying your various vehicles? Making them unusable?
We had the MT sergeant with a gang going round with hammers and setting fire to trucks, taking pieces out and so on. With the remaining guns that there were, that we had, I think there were four left in the brigade, we took their sights I'd managed to get sights off one or two of the other guns, strangely enough, and kept them. So I think we had six sights and various pieces of equipment and so on that were necessary for the guns. Quite useless they were when we got them home, because they were 25mm French, of which there were none at home. However, we carried what we could. We carried all Bren guns. I carried a rifle.
But the guns, would you actually do anything else to them? Just put an explosive charge, or would they just take bits, vital bits off and then leave them?
Oh, no, we spiked them all, I think.
How did you go about spiking?
Well, we put a round in the muzzle and fired the thing. Fired in, so there was an explosion in the muzzle.
So they'd be unusable?
Oh, yes, completely.
So having done this... Where exactly did you do that? How far from the beach were you at that stage?
It was within a few minutes' walk at the beach, I think. Well, a half an hour's walk, perhaps. And then we marched down onto the beaches. But we were right at Bray Dunes. I don't know how far Bray Dunes is now. I can't remember. But it's some miles from Dunkirk.
And what was the scene on the beach when you arrived?
Nothing to be seen at all on the sea. Nothing. I knew nothing about this evacuation by sea. I never saw any of it. I saw ships down later on when we got nearer Dunkirk. But it was night time when we were walking along the beaches.
And were there troops on the beaches? On the beach at Bray Dunes?
No, just our own division marching along in V formations or whatever formations.
And you were marching along the beach to...
Just walking along towards Dunkirk, I suppose.